Hello and welcome to Freudian Quips, a WPRK 91.5 FM radio show dedicated to promoting mental health awareness through the examination of popular culture and global current events. I'm your co-host, Dr. Samuel Sanabria.
And I'm your other co-host, Dr. Derek Palladino.
And today we are going to talk about empathy, which is
very excited.
I'm excited about this too. I mean, it is the foundation of what we do as professional counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about empathy, describe what it is and what it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so important for us to adopt into our lives, and what we can do to cultivate it?
How do we create it?
Exactly.
Because you may not have any empathy whatsoever.
Well, I'm sure people have the capacity for some level of empathy, but
they don't use it, or
they
there's
may not
nothing.
Use it. Yeah, absolutely.
They might be in circumstances where the empathy is, you know, held back for
mm-hmm.
certain reasons,
or they may have been socialized in such a way,
yeah.
where their empathy has been suppressed, their ability to empathize has been suppressed. So,
mm-hmm.
but anyways, before we go into that, Derek, how was your weekend?
Well,
what's going on?
Before I start about my weekend,
yes.
I want to make sure that we give a great shout out to one of our friends here at WPRK, DJ Sen, and her show Traveler, which is every Wednesday live from 12 to 2. And you may hear us talking on there now and again because we tape the same time that DJ Sen is live. So give her a listen. Great music. Sam, you're really into it.
I love her.
Yeah.
I think she's fantastic.
Yep. So please support other WPRK live programs and other podcasts. So this weekend, we did a couple of things. We were kind of busy. We went to Disney on Saturday with some friends who are in from Michigan. And we went to the pool at their Disney resort, which it was a cold, cloudy day for me at least. And they were jumping in the pool, and it took me a lot of convincing to get in that swimming pool.
Well, that's fun.
Well, yeah, it was a cold day for me.
I actually really enjoy going to the Disney resorts and just hanging out by the pool.
I do sneak in.
Oh, I'm not supposed to do that, and I will deny that if ever presented with it, deny that I would do it.
It's
but,
recorded that you do it.
Oh, yeah, but how do you know it's me?
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I could be the evil Dr. Sam Sanabria.
Oh, so. The other one.
The other evil one.
The
yes,
other
that's
evil
right.
Dr. Sanabria.
Yeah. No, but I really do enjoy that. In particular, my favorite one is the Polynesian Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
I just laying by the beach. And
all that you could
stuff.
Watch the fireworks from the beach there, which is nice, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, fantastic. Actually, our weekend, we went to my in-laws. They live in St. Augustine.
I didn't even know you had in-laws.
I do have in-laws.
Yeah.
How do you...
I'm joking.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was nice time. We really enjoy going there and just spending some time, and really like that Lucia gets to hang out with our cousins because she doesn't get to do that often enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right.
Very cool.
Yeah,
so
I'm glad you're doing well.
Yeah, why don't we dive into it?
Okay, let's do that. And let's start off by talking, what is empathy?
What is empathy?
Absolutely, yeah.
What is a person being empathetic? As well. So empathy is the, and there's many definitions. I like this one.
Okay.
Is the capacity to understand or feel what another person is experiencing from within the other person's frame of reference. It's the capacity to place oneself in another's position. So for example,
mm-hmm.
being able to put myself in your shoes for the experience you're having. So if you are having difficulty, say you have test anxiety.
Yes.
And you're coming into my class and I can just sort of see the anxiety non-verbally and physically on you. If I'm able to jump into your shoes, I can also sort of think about, what does this anxiety mean to me? What is this fear? Does it mean that if I fail, I'm not going to be any good, that I'm a failure for the program, that I'm not going to graduate? All these different types of things are entering that
mm-hmm,
individual's
mm-hmm.
brain
right.
and also into their heart, all these different types of feelings of worry and fear. So if I can feel empathy for that person, it's me sort of understanding all those potential feelings and beliefs they have about themselves, and being also as a therapist would be communicating that back to them, that I hear you, that I understand where you are. But as not a therapist, it's just understanding that that person has more going on than what they're showing, and more they're thinking about, more they're feeling more, and acknowledging that and understanding that and sort of allowing that to have its own space.
Okay, so then what is the difference? Because I hear this being used interchangeably a mm-hmm. lot, but I know that there is a difference between empathy and sympathy.
Yeah.
What's sympathy?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Sympathy is it's the feeling, you've heard people say, oh, I feel bad for this person. Yeah. Or you have sympathy for someone.
I feel sorry for that person.
Yeah, sorry for you, sorry for your loss might be a common phrase, or is a common phrase you hear all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's said when you may not be able to access those person's feelings, right, or not know what to say, is I feel sorry for you, rather than I can tell you're in a lot of grief right now.
Yeah, so it's more of an external thought about that person as opposed to an internal,
right,
understanding of that,
mm-hmm,
person. So you feeling sorry for someone is saying, okay, I'm over here.
Uh-huh.
You have that experience that's over there.
Yeah. Good luck with all that.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you are experiencing that right now.
Uh-huh.
And there's nothing wrong with sympathy. There's nothing wrong with showing expressing your condolence over,
yeah,
something. Absolutely, there's nothing wrong with that, and we're not suggesting that in any way, but we're just talking about what's the difference between sympathy and empathy.
Right, we even use sympathy,
yeah,
in therapy. I mean, if a client has lost someone or has gone through something horrible,
mm-hmm,
I'm going to say I'm really sorry that was a part of your life.
Absolutely.
A part of your experience.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Sympathy. Empathy part is what they're feeling in connection to it, and can I connect with that specifically?
Yeah, and so as a therapist, because now that you brought that in,
I'm a therapist. Did you know that?
Yeah, I do. I think
so.
I
are you?
Do know that. Well, that's
debatable. I heard about that.
I heard about that too. But so as a therapist, I mean, our job is to demonstrate empathy, to work towards connecting with our,
yeah,
clients and trying to understand their world view and their,
mm-hmm,
experience. Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about that? It's like, how does that happen in therapy?
How do I connect with someone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's first allowing myself to just be in the room and allow their story to take prominence. So
yeah,
their perception is correct whenever they're sitting with me. So if I have a client who says, you know, I got a B on this test.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna fail the program, basically. So my mind would say, well, you're not gonna fail the program because it's only a B, and you know your grade doesn't mean the rest of your life is over. But
that's the rational side.
That's the rational side.
That is
your
head saying, come on,
yeah,
you know,
get over.
Get
it,
a break.
Right?
What is that? Get a break or
get a break?
Is it get a break or
take a chill pill?
No. Yeah, take a chill pill. There
okay.
you go. Yeah. Right. So that's your head speaking.
My 1980s head saying, take a chill pill. And but that's not what the client's feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
The client's feeling very scared and vulnerable and concerned and worried. So instead of saying you should be fine, a B isn't the end of the world, and you'll be able to bring up your grade in the semester, it'll be, I can really tell that this is affecting you, and you're scared you're going to be kicked out of the program. Because
mm-hmm.
even if I don't believe that,
right,
it's what they believe. And unless I connect with them on their level and where they are sitting, they will not work with me further.
Mm-hmm.
So now there's a wall up.
So what's the disadvantage of saying something like to that person, take a chill pill, relax, you're not going to fail, you got to be, come on, let's think rationally about
yeah.
this.
You're not validating them.
Yeah.
You're not validating their feeling, what they're going through.
Yeah, and you know, and what would happen, and in many cases, and we have experienced this through our own development as therapists, I'm sure that there have been times where you have fallen into that area where you're trying to help the client more in that rational
sure,
level.
Sure.
But they dismiss it.
Yeah.
They dismiss it. They say, yeah, it's a yes, but.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have that head understanding, but still that feeling is dominant, that feeling of being a failure. There is still that sense of, I did something wrong.
Absolutely.
And it is very scary for the client. And so when you go into that headspace and say, everything is going to be fine,
mm-hmm.
don't you worry about it, we're not really affirming what that experience is like for that
right.
client.
Yeah. I think it's a great way to say it. We need to affirm where they are.
Right, absolutely.
If we don't affirm where they are, we can't go anywhere.
Right, and then, if they dismiss you
mm-hmm.
and say yes, but, then they walk away feeling like they were not understood,
mm-hmm.
that you can't connect with them,
right?
And we
mm-hmm.
lose that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in therapy. That's
so in everyday life.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah.
Is like, how do we apply this in
so
everyday life?
So let's say that you and Brad Pitt had an awful breakup, okay? You guys were just yelling at each other, and there was pots and pans thrown. I don't know, some money was taken out of somebody's account. Maybe shirts were
That was never proven.
That was maybe he threw all your sweaters in the washing machine. They shrunk to really tiny sweaters. Who knows what happens?
Yeah.
And you come to me and say, you know, oh, I can't believe Brad did all this stuff to me. And I
come
say,
to you as a friend.
As a friend, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And as a friend, I say, you're better than him. Get over it. You don't need him. What am I doing to you?
I'm not affirming my feelings.
Yep.
You're just dismissing what is really overwhelming me at this moment is all these feelings about, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this is happening to me. I can't believe this has happened to my relationship. I may even be thinking, oh, poor Brad, what did I do to him?
Yeah.
Even though it was not proven.
Mm-hmm.
What have I done? You know, and so you're just simplifying my experience and reducing it to a very simple pop psychology statement.
Right. And from my frame of reference.
And it is, yeah, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because you're an outsider, it's not affecting you emotionally. Mm-hmm. So you get to quickly and easily say something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's because it makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm. So I hope we gave a couple of descriptions here that help
help
frame this for you as we go into today's episode. We're going to talk about a few news stories and such.
Let's talk about that because, you know, I really want to emphasize why this is so important for our society and for people to really understand and to adopt in their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has been some, you know, as we talked about doing this topic for this week, I thought about
I mentioned that I'm very excited about today's topic?
I think you have.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Okay.
Okay. So, the first thing that came to my mind were these two news stories that happened in our country and where I've had encounters with other people where they've expressed their opinions about these news stories that to me lacked empathy and it really bothered me as my interactions. Okay, so the first one happened last year and I don't know if you recall, I think this was in June of 2014 where we had a refugee slash immigration, because mm-hmm. it really depends on who you talk to about this and how they saw this news story. But we saw an influx of young refugee slash immigrant children coming into the U.S. via the Mexican border. And we're talking about thousands of children from South American, Central American, you know, countries who were fleeing for safety purposes. And they were coming into our country and then we were faced with this situation in which we are now having to support these children, to address mm-hmm. these children, okay? And so our country was really divided over this. And so some people that I spoke to took the position of, well, we wouldn't have had this problem if we had addressed the border situation, the immigration border, and closed our borders.
Mm-hmm.
Because now look at what's going on. We have to spend all this money taking care of these children. You know,
or they would call them anchor babies.
They call them anchor babies. Yeah, and then you know, then you had the other side who were looking at it from the child's perspective, and what an experience they must have that they are coming to our country alone, without family,
mm-hmm.
and seeking help in escaping this life that they had, you know, back home.
Yeah, what must they be feeling on the other side that makes them come here?
Right, and so there are, you know, half of the people who saw this as a problem in our country were looking at this as an immigration problem. It's like, you see, we won't have this problem if we just close the borders. And then we had the other who saw this as a refugee, as an escaping and seeking what is that? Not sanctity.
Asylum?
But asylum in our country and help, you know. So anyways, you know, the reason why this comes to mind is because I've had these conversations with different
mm-hmm,
people
yeah.
and remember feeling upset with people who saw it as an immigration problem that we should have just closed the borders. And to me, I felt like that was somebody who was really lacking empathy. So anyways, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I'm wondering too for you, was the feeling... Do you think it came from you being a counselor? Did it come from you just being a human in touch with people's feelings? Because when you do watch the news, it's very sensationalized about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't always sort of, it might be difficult to sort of feel empathy and put your feelings into the individual that's underneath the story, underneath the news reporter talking, underneath all the images and everything, to get down to sort of the heart of the person. So I'm wondering what it was about you that was able to get down there that others can't do it.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. And I think that it goes way before me being a counselor, because I believe that I'm looking back in my life, that I have been more on the empathetic side.
Yeah.
I've had the ability to look at the person, hear the person's mm-hmm. story, and try to understand where they're coming from, which is probably what led me into this career
right.
in the first place. So, I would say I've had this, mm-hmm. you know.
It's been a part of you the whole time, yeah.
You know, absolutely. And it's funny because I do, now that I'm thinking about this, I remember being a child of the 80s, listening to a lot of very emotional type
Morrissey,
of Morrissey,
The Cure,
yeah, exactly, yeah, and yeah. you know, where it really does require me to tap into my emotions, and then of course, protest music, the social justice music like Tracy Chapman, you know, I remember, just
and in the 90s
there.
That yeah. would be Radiohead and Midnight Oil,
okay, oh Midnight Oil, yeah, yeah. So I've always been that child, and I think that my experience being a gay person, because I came out at the age of 12, and experiencing discrimination and oppression as a gay child, and then integrating that with my experience being a Latino person, living in Miami, living in Hialeah in particular, during the Cuban refugee mm-hmm. movement that was happening at that time, and knowing what the sentiment was in my community and my environment, because a lot of people were angry, I think that I really developed that empathy. And I think that people who encounter stories like the Cuban refugee, you know, migration of the 70s would, that, you know, when you're faced with that, you do take one of two stands.
Yeah.
You take the, well, we should have closed the borders. Now they're a burden on our society. And then, because I've heard that side of the story, and I knew that my neighbors expressed that, and then they treated us as refugees mm-hmm. because since we're Spanish,
right.
we were automatically clumped into Cuban refugees. And or you take the other position, it's like, wow, look at these people. They're suffering in their own country. Mm-hmm. They're coming here to this wonderful country, you know, for help and asylum. So, I say you take either side. I don't, you know, now I'm thinking about, am I even answering your question?
You did. No,
you got me on a roll.
You did.
Here.
No,
yes.
I really appreciate where you took it, though. Yeah.
But I do get angry. I do get angry and very frustrated. And what I struggle with is now my being empathetic towards the point of view of other people.
Sure. And that's one of the difficult things about our job, I think, is, I mean, there's times where, I have to sit with somebody who is the perpetrator of something heinous.
Yes.
And I'm their therapist.
Right.
In order for me to do any work with them, I have to find empathy for them on some level. I don't have to agree what they did at all. And I usually never do, and I always never do.
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Because if you empathize with someone, do you have to agree?
I don't think you do.
With them?
You just need to understand their feeling.
Mm.
So I can say what you did was horrible. But I also see someone who has some pain inside of them, or someone that might have regret,
right?
Or someone that might be scared of what's going to happen next. So you can feel empathy for them in different ways and still not agree with what they did.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. I mean, that's really important to know. And it is important to really try to understand where people are coming from. Yeah. Another story that I thought was really interesting that came to my mind when we talked about doing empathy was something that happened earlier this year, and it was in September. Actually, it was last month. And there was a video footage of a journalist who tripped a Syrian refugee. I believe it was a father and his son, and he was escaping.
I saw the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He was escaping war and terror with his son. His name is Osama Abdul Mohsen, and in the midst of these refugees fleeing she was recording this, and she was a journalist for a news station that is, and I just learned this now as I was doing the research, a right-wing news station.
Okay.
And so apparently she tripped him and caused him to fall and his child.
While he was holding his child.
While he was holding his child, fleeing from war and terror. And, you know, so anyway, so it angered a lot of people.
Like,
And there was a video footage. I mean, you saw the picture of it, but there was a video footage of this. And it really, I remember seeing this, and it was all over the news, and people were just outraged over this. But then there were some people who really sympathized with the journalist.
In what way?
Well, that she was trying to stop this influx of people invading another country. And she was actually a citizen of that country that these refugees were coming into, you know. So they were really trying to empathize with her, sympathize. I was like, oh, you know, and trying to side with her. So I think this is very interesting how people see these news stories.
If you had her as a client, how would you handle that? As you're telling the story, I feeling myself feel a little bit of anger towards what she did, because it's horrible, and I imagine you're feeling the same thing.
I do, and then it would be very difficult for me, and that's a really good question, and I would have to, prior to meeting with her, really take some time, reflect on my feelings, my internal reaction and emotions, which is more internalized than feelings, which are just words that we put to our emotions, and really be prepared to work with her and try to see her as a human being who got caught up in the moment as well.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a challenge, but it would be a challenging exercise for me.
And a welcomed moment as you develop even more.
Absolutely.
As a therapist.
Yeah, right.
I would feel the same way.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult for me, especially if I had all of this knowledge of, and I've seen the video and the picture and sort of, I don't know, as a father, it hits me even more that, and what's her tripping going to do? Is that person going to get up and go, okay, sounds good, I'll turn around. I mean,
Especially when they were, I don't know how many people were fleeing, hundreds or thousands of people fleeing. Here's this one person she decided with a child to kick. She didn't just trip him, she kicked him. I saw the video.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was pretty upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But to me, it was somebody there who was really lacking empathy towards the experiences of these people who were fleeing their country.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about that these research that we come across.
Okay. Well, there's this one psychologist, Daniel Batson.
Mm-hmm.
He's researched empathy for decades and just a very long time. And so he's talked a bit about how this term can be broken down to different concepts. So me and Sam have been talking about empathy sort of globally, but what's the different pieces?
Yeah, like the different types of empathy or the way that it can manifest itself?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun. I'm reading this and it says, he argues that the term, and it sounds very, is he angry? Have people been like leaving bad notes saying no empathy isn't all these eight things?
You know, people saying, no, it's not that. Oh, yes, it is. Like, I can see him like banging on the table, being angry with
you
them.
You think he would have more empathy?
You would
doing
think so.
All this,
they would
research.
Have an understanding,
okay.
Yes.
So I'm going to run through these eight things. Just you can understand the different pieces of empathy. And one would be empathy is knowing another's thoughts and feelings, which means I'm actually fully understanding what Sam's going through. So if Sam has, say he lost someone in his family that he was close to or lost a friend, and I have lost someone in my family or lost a friend, there's a good chance that I kind of know his thoughts going through this, but still leaving room and flexibility that we're going to experience grief in a different way, but I can feel empathy for him because I too have lost myself.
So that knowing part, would it just being able to identify what those feelings are?
Exactly.
Is similar to what we do in therapy where we reflect the experiences or the feelings of our clients?
Sort of.
Yeah?
So
okay.
Knowing, it would be in therapy if I was working with you as a client and I knew what grief was like myself.
Okay.
That's knowing your thoughts.
Okay.
The next one is imagining another's thoughts.
Mm.
And that's where, based off of our conversation, I can sort of place a feeling that I think is connected to everything you're experiencing. That makes sense.
Okay.
So in my head, my grief thought might be, oh, well, I was sad when I lost someone, so he must be sad. But in reality, you might be sad, but you also might be infuriated at this person that they left you.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the one thing that maybe you haven't talked to me about yet, but I'm getting a sense from different things you're saying that you're pretty angry that now you're alone.
Right.
And that's what I reflect back to you. I'm hearing that you're sad, awfully sad about losing this person, but also you're very angry that they left you, that they left you stranded. You know, so it sort of is... We would call it in the counseling world is advanced empathy. It's empathy that the client hasn't spoken about just yet.
Right, okay.
Yep. Another one is adopting the posture of another, and it's as simple as if you're sitting with somebody and they kind of slump forward and are saddened, then you just kind of lean in towards them. It's sort of mirroring that same feeling that they have without saying anything. That's feeling that nonverbal empathy for another person.
Okay.
This one kind of goes along with the first one, actually feeling as another does. So in the first one, we talked about thoughts, which means in my head, I know what you're experiencing. This one is what you're doing is touching me in a way that I'm starting to feel that emotion too.
Right.
So there's been a time when I've cried with a client
because
their story was so sad and I was feeling sad. We just sort of sat there together and shared that space of emotion.
Yeah. You know, from a neuroscience view, that's called mirror neurons that are affected, where you're in the presence of somebody who's experiencing something and you've had those experiences before, your brain then starts to develop those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so it could be triggering for you, right?
Absolutely.
Or it could be something that you just have a strong compassion for this person, what they're going through.
Okay, good. All right.
The next few I'm going to go through quickly. Imagining how one would feel or think in another's place. Feeling distress at another's suffering. Feeling for another's suffering, sometimes called pity or compassion, which would be that, sympathy. I mean, pity isn't a very positive word, but it's a way that we do connect with other people.
Well, just like we said, that sympathy is also incorporated in what we do and how we relate to people.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it needs to be attached to empathy.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And finally, projecting oneself into another situation. So this might be the best way that I think counseling works in terms of feeling empathic towards another person, us putting ourselves in the other person's shoes, experiencing what they're experiencing. And it's a very difficult thing to do. I think for therapists who are trained, they learn how to put up a barrier and a boundary that I'm going to dip my toe into what you're experiencing, but enough where I can get a sense of what you're feeling, but also be separate so I can think about how I'm going to work with you once I reflect and connect with you on what you're actually feeling at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a very good list here, and it's important to be able to look at it from these different perspectives. Now, this is a question that comes up in class a lot from students is, do you need to have had the same experience as someone else in order to empathize with them? For example, do you need to have had a divorce in order to understand somebody who, or empathize with somebody who is going through a divorce?
Yes. No, I'm joking.
Yeah. So go get those divorces, people.
Go get your life experience before you become a therapist.
Yes.
I don't think you do. I really don't think you do, because what I would do, because I haven't had a divorce. My wife's been divorced, and I could talk to her about her experience if that helps me working with a client.
Okay.
But what I would do in that circumstance is kind of, it's simplifying it, which I do in my head, but I don't do it in a way I sit with a client, is a divorce first I need to figure out if it's a happy divorce or a sad divorce for this person that's sitting in front of me. They might be glad to be out.
That
right?
is very true.
Right.
Yes.
So you got to figure that out. And if you have been divorced, your bias is going to come in if it was a happy or sad divorce or angry divorce for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of need to work through that piece first. The second part is, I haven't been divorced, but I have lost stuff.
Yeah.
I have moved and have missed friends that I've had. It's not divorcing them, but I know what it's like at a smaller level than a divorce to not have someone around that used to be around all the time.
Yeah.
And I can imagine, good or bad, if you've been someone for 30 years, that's all you know for 30 years. So losing that has to be difficult regardless if you're happy or sad. So I could take all these little tiny pieces of what that person is going through. I can imagine there has to be some anxiety connected to figuring out this next life transition that I'm going to have to do. If I have children, what happens with that? I'm scared, you know? It's me putting myself in their shoes and maybe also taking tiny experiences that I've had that aren't triggering for me. Ones that I can have a similar lower grade feeling to what they're experiencing, and then sort of jump into that and then go to where I think they're feeling and connect with them on that
level. So it's not the experience, it's the feeling behind it. You don't So that's very important to understand, because you may not have gone through that divorce, but the feelings that may be associated with that, because it could be happy at divorce, but sadness, anger, anxiety, all of those feelings you've have experienced yourself in other situations. Mm-hmm. So you can empathize with those feelings. Okay, so that makes total sense. Absolutely.
And as a caveat, though, since I haven't been in a divorce, I don't know how a divorce works. Mm-hmm. I don't know the legal issues. I don't know how long it takes. I don't know the laws connected to it. So I'm going to have to do a lot more studying for the knowledge aspect of it.
Right, but that comes out in therapy, because the client could then talk about what it's like to go through all those procedures and proceedings, and how stressful that might be, how confusing it might be. Those are experiences. You know what it's like to be confused. You know what it's like to be frustrated. You know what it's like to wait and wait and not know what's going to happen next, right?
So it's two pieces. It's feeling, absolutely. Connecting to that feeling, and also connecting to the person more by showing you're important to me as a client, so I'm going to do some research on what's going on with you right now.
Yeah.
But simple friend to friend, it's the same thing. You know, it's you connecting with feeling, but if they're going through something, you could look up what that means.
Yeah.
The knowledge piece of it, to show that you care and you want to understand more. And the idea of feeling empathy is not going in overly confident and saying, I know exactly what you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
It's let me hear your experience, connect with you and your experience, and then let you know I want to know more.
Yeah. Well, let me say that when I hear people say that it's better, because sometimes I also hear it's better that you do have the same experience. So, for example, I know that I've had some clients, when I talk to them, say, well, I am going through this experience and I want to talk to somebody who also has gone through that experience, thinking that that person would be more empathetic and understand their situation. But that is not necessarily true at all.
Right.
So having the same experience does not make one more empathetic. In fact, research, and we know this, that it depends on that person's experience, whether it was easy for them or hard for them, how they overcame it. So studies have shown that people who had an experience where it was difficult for them to overcome, where perhaps they were not able to overcome and they were overwhelmed by that experience, were more empathetic to somebody else's experience. But a person who had that same experience but was able to overcome it, they had the resources available to them, the support available to them, and that they were able to move forward, were found to be less empathetic, because it was kind of like a looking back and say, well, if I did it and if I was able to go through it and not struggle, why are you? You know, so it's, you know, we need to understand that, again, it's about being able to understand the feelings and the experiences of the person. Okay, that's what's most important, and not necessarily having that experience.
Great point. Yeah. Great point.
So then let's go into, why is empathy so important? Why do we need this for ourselves? Why do we need more empathy in our society?
Well, studies show that, and they argue, studies argue.
They argue. They argue. You know, we haven't argued yet.
We
have we argued in any of our episodes?
No.
I've been
it's usually
waiting
like
for
before
that.
And after. And then, but it's it's always in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I'm always winning these arguments, too.
Oh, well, that's funny, because in my head, I'm winning these arguments.
Well, we can agree to disagree.
No, because you're just wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, but we haven't argued yet on this show.
Haven't.
We haven't had, you know, and I think that's because we're just really empathetic towards each other.
15?
Is that a date?
Yeah, let's do it.
So episode 15, we're going to argue.
Oh, yeah, let's rip each other apart.
Okay, I'm going to put that down on my calendar. Episode 15, don't miss it, listeners.
I'm going to start writing some one-liner zingers right now.
Okay, but I just want you to know that I already won that argument. Okay.
Fine.
All right, so why is empathy... Okay. Why is empathy so important?
Well, so studies have argued that being empathetic doesn't just improve relationships. We've been talking about how to improve relationships so far, but it reduces prejudice, racism... It decreases bullying. It encourages us to help others and want to feel altruistic and sort of be in each other's lives in that way. And it promotes tolerance and emotional well-being in others. Just so many wonderful things. And when I think of it makes us understand human life.
Right.
The holistic person in just having care and compassion for others and really setting ourselves aside, pulling away from pity, pulling away from sympathy, and just saying, I want to understand and be with you. Mm-hmm. And if I could understand what you're going through, so I'm not going to bully you because I know what you're feeling when you get bullied.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So you talked about that study where if people have been bullied and they haven't overcome it, they're going to have more empathy for those who are still bullied.
Yeah.
So that's the easy one-on-one empathy connection. The more difficult one is to say, I haven't been bullied, but as I'm watching you get bullied, I could see the pain in your eyes and what this is doing to you. So I'm now going to have empathy for what you're experiencing, even though I haven't.
What a wonderful world this would be if we saw empathy happen with everybody, and across countries, across the world. You know, and this reminds me, talking about bullying, this reminds me of something that I was really happy about. And you may not have experienced this yet because I know that Miles is not in daycare regularly. But when Lucia was in daycare... the school that she went to really emphasized teaching empathy to young children. And I loved that. And social responsibility as well. And so I remember her coming home from school talking about what it's like to be bullied, what it's like to lose a parent, you know, because they talked about these and they read stories to children about these experiences in order to increase empathy. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of schools are working towards helping our young children, our young people to develop that at an early age because it's so important, right? And in the hopes that we can reduce that bullying and reduce that conflict, you know, amongst other people.
And I think starting young is so important because it takes an open, like children, we can mold them any way we want, really, right? I mean, that's why children grow up in certain religions, not knowing what those religions are about, really, or can be able to compare and contrast them. But teaching children feelings and building their emotional intelligence, that's what leads to these adults who can feel empathy and compassion for others. And if you don't get that in an early age, there's a chance you're going to struggle with it when you get older. It's going to be a lot more difficult to become that empathetic person.
Absolutely. And it's you know, what's important too, to keep in mind why we should be teaching empathy and what it does for the person. Let's look at it from a selfish perspective. Because, you know, when we think of empathy, we're thinking about the other person, the other person, the other person, and how it benefits the other person, the other person. But it also benefits us if we were more empathetic, because we would have better relationships. Yeah. We would have better connections with other people, then that would then lift us up as individuals. And then people would be more apt to be empathetic towards us.
We wouldn't have to fight on episode 15.
I know. But I'm looking forward to that
Okay, me too.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm really happy about this. So let's talk about how we can be empathetic, because I'm glad that we're teaching our young children, or many schools are doing this, not all schools, but what can we do now? What can listeners do now in order to develop their empathy? Absolutely, as adults.
Well, I think it takes a mind shift, right? So we have to be able to move and consciously move from ourselves to other people. And I remember when I was a And we were both in the same master's program at the University of Florida. And my professor, I think it was Dr. Jim Archer. He's taught theories, I think.
He has taught theories, yes.
It was either him or some other professor.
No, it was Dr. Archer.
But it might not be theories class. Anyway, so some professor at Florida gave us homework to build empathy. And the homework was to watch soap operas. and what our goal and what our goal
was.
That is
really interesting. Right? Okay.
So soap operas, I mean, it's very easy to not have empathy for the very dramatic types of emotional outbursts and heightened emotions that are that you can see on the TV screen. But our goal was to watch them, regardless of what we thought about them, reflect what they were feeling.
Hmm.
So that's how we started sort of pushing ourselves to sort of try to experience what other people are going through. So if someone was like, say, some guy who had a one eye and a little, you know, what are the things over here? An eye patch, and he had a cane, and he had a sword in the cane, and he came out lunging, riding down a staircase banister and stabbed someone.
Mm-hmm. I just had a visual, yes.
If I were to reflect his feeling,
yes.
He was feeling vengeful, right?
Mm,
even
angry,
if I disagreed with sliding down a banister, because, you know, I think walking is more safe, he still feels very angry and vengeful, and that's what I'm reflecting. I'm being sort of in himself. So
yeah, but then, but wait. Don't stop there, because then you can start thinking about what happened in his life, what experiences he had that...
Yeah.
Made him be vengeful or caused him to be more of that, you know, have that vengeful emotion and feeling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very, very good. You know, it's funny because, well, first of all, I used to watch soap operas.
Me too.
Yeah.
I was a General Hospital guy.
Mine was All My Children, and I'm so sad that it's no longer on the air.
Do you know that there's a character based on me from As the World Turns?
I don't understand what you're saying.
You know the soap opera As the World Turns?
Yes, I've heard about it.
There's a character. There was a character.
Yeah, based on you?
Based on me in the late 90s.
Really?
Yep.
And who is this person?
I don't... For a later show.
It's for a later show?
For a later show.
Okay, because I really want to know this.
I was talking about it in one of my classes, and we looked up the person and everything like
and
that.
And it was like Derek Palladino, and, you know...
it was my face on someone else's body.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
no,
so...
But no,
I remember... So it was All My Children. I remember seeing that, and as you were talking about this, I was thinking about all the characters that were on My Children and how difficult it would be to empathize with many of them because they were just such not nice people.
Mm-hmm.
So now, and then I don't recall that being an assignment for myself when I took Dr. Archer's class.
It might have been Dr. Howard Hamilton in Skills.
Okay, good, because I would have loved to have had that assignment.
Yeah, so what I've done in my classes now and again is make them watch reality shows. And do the same thing.
Well, you know, it's funny because research shows this is another way that we can build our empathy, and that is watching movies and reading books that are fictional. Okay, did you know that?
Fictional or non-fictional?
Fictional.
Fictional.
Oh, well, this study in particular looked at fiction stories. You know, for example, reading Alice Walker's The Color Purple. It's a fictional story, but it's very emotional and tells the story of a woman's struggle and, you know, oppression.
Because they can paint
so
the picture more of what sort of the
vividly.
Emotional context around
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah. And then we can have a better story and understanding of what it's like to live in this world. And so, and movies do the same thing, certain types of movies. But I can also see how non-fictional stories can develop empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, but that's really interesting. So watching, increasing your view of movies and reading fictional books.
Even
is
how about
very
this?
Helpful.
You watch Harry Potter, right? You've seen Harry Potter.
I have not. I'm sorry.
You haven't?
No.
Oh.
I haven't even read the books.
Okay.
But well, but I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
What am I going to say?
Okay, so I know that this was an issue on the news a few years ago about how reading Harry Potter books helped children to develop empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were a lot of people who were very angry over that because it's like, oh, yeah, empathy, or you know, it was indoctrinating children in accepting gay people or something.
Okay,
to that effect. Is that what you were going
to
say?
Well, all in the same vein,
okay,
right?
Okay.
So two instances are pointing out to me. One was that within Harry Potter, there's the half-bloods, which are half wizard, witch, and half human with no magical
mm-hmm.
powers.
Okay.
Like they come from one parent that's wizard, one parent that's not wizard. And so they are seen as less than the mm-hmm. people who have mm-hmm. two parents who are both. And you
two parents that are
both wizards or witches.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I might be getting my Harry Potter lore wrong. So
oh, you're going to get hate mail, emails.
I'm
going to
get tons of hate mail.
But, I know.
But follow me somewhat on this. So so what we would see in the movie is those peoples that were, I think they're called mudbloods, were half of what they thought was pure.
Mm-hmm.
So they got bullied. They got made fun of. There's a whole, I mean, the movies were trying to get rid of them, basically, you know. So we saw that. And then you have empathy for those characters. And the Hermione was one of those characters in the movie who are struggling and are very good at what they do, but they're still seen as less than because
okay.
of that. And that,
right.
we can trace this all the way back to history and anti-miscegenation and one drop rule where, you know, if you have one drop of black blood, you were black, and how that was viewed by society and all that. But that's for another podcast.
Yeah,
the other
okay.
one was Ron Weasley came from a low SES family, yet he was going to this wizard school that had people who had more money,
okay,
and better circumstances.
Right, yeah.
So he was made fun of for that. So then you have empathy for the conditions he's coming from and how he must feel living one way with his parents and sort of having to be around all these people who have so much more than him. So you build empathy for sort of the people who struggle within the movie.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So then the moral of this story is to watch more Harry Potter and read more Harry Potter books if you want to develop your empathy.
If you want to, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
No, I just remember this being an issue in the news where people were really concerned or upset because young children, they felt that young children were being indoctrinated. So, okay, so what other ways can we improve our empathy?
I think hearing people's stories, meeting new people, allowing new things to enter into your world. Research mm-hmm. has showed that it's easier for us to have empathy for those who are like us. So
yeah,
in
right.
order for us to build more empathy, we need to extend our worldview.
Interact with people who
yes.
are not like us. Yeah, because we tend to be in a little bubble. And we since we feel comfortable with people who are like us, that's who we tend to associate with. But
yeah, take a darn risk.
Take a risk, go out
yep.
there and meet new people. Okay, very good. I like that, actually.
Yeah.
All right, what
and
else?
And then finally, just be aware of judgments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what it feels like to be judged. So when you are thinking about what somebody else is doing, whether their behavior, how they're reacting to something, think about if you were in that circumstance, if someone judged you, what you would feel like. So
mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
again, we're trying to put ourselves in the other person's position. And doing that will prevent us from judging, from sort of bullying, from having negative reactions to people.
Okay. And the last one is very important, but that is to practice listening more and talking less.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, hearing those stories. But practice that empathetic listening and encouraging the person to share more by using reflective statements,
mm-hmm.
Showing that you do understand or that you are along the lines of understanding what it is that they're experiencing. So that's very important.
Yeah. Okay, I would say become a therapist, but not all therapists are empathic or empathetic.
You don't think so?
No, I don't. I think you can get by with knowing what to do, but there are some therapists that I've experienced that just don't hold the empathy in such a way that they can connect with anyone who sits across from
wow,
them.
Wow, that's really interesting. So
yeah.
you feel like there's some out there that
totally,
just
yeah.
go through the motions because
mm-hmm.
they know what to say and they were trained to say it that way.
Yeah,
but
and you get
it's
jaded.
It's not internalized.
Yeah, you can get jaded too
oh,
in the field.
Oh, I actually do see a lot of
yeah.
that, unfortunately, a lot of burnout. It's called compassion fatigue.
It is called that.
Yes. So, okay. So, great ways. Great
yep.
ways to build up empathy and...
here we go again.
Wow.
Another
okay,
doctor's
so
note,
doctor's notes. Okay, so this one...
Base.
...is from a listener, and we are going to call him Christopher Crossroads. Crossroads.
Cross,
okay.
Christopher Cross. Rhodes.
Yeah, Christopher Cross Rhodes.
Because okay. Christopher is at the crossroads of something, isn't he?
He is at the crossroads of something. He writes in because he, well, first of all, we're glad that he's listening and that he wrote us and that he enjoys these podcasts. And then he wrote because he is interested in pursuing a degree in mental health and was wondering how to go about doing that.
Oh,
he
okay.
has his undergraduate in history.
Mm-hmm.
And originally, he thought that he would teach history at a school. But now he is thinking about changing his career. He says that he has always been told that he was a very good listener and gave good advice. So this is an area that he's interested in, but doesn't even know where to begin with this, given that he has a history degree.
So first of all, I would say kudos for him wanting to teach in a school and not like an alley. Because you said he wanted to teach in a school. Okay.
Did I say that?
Yeah, he wanted to teach in a school. And I'm just saying that's a good thing.
Oh, because I made the point to say that he wants to teach in a school as opposed to teaching in a...
Or a back of a U-Haul truck.
Let me tell you, we are going to fight on episode 15, okay? Because enough is enough. No. Okay.
Well, first I'll say you can have any undergrad degree if you want to become get a master's degree in counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from our perspective in our program, the more diverse the undergrad degree, the better. And the more rich the classroom experience is going to be for you and for other people.
Right. Diversity is very good. Yeah. Yeah. But this is assuming that he wants to become a clinical mental health counselor, mm-hmm. right? Because there's many different disciplines out there. There's clinical psychology, counseling psychology, mental health counseling, marriage and family counseling. You know, there's a lot of things. But we are clinical mental health counselors. We have a license in that in our area. And for that, you can go into a master's degree in mental health counseling.
Mm-hmm, right.
Rollins has one. UCF has one. And get licensed at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unlike perhaps in the psychology profession where you need to get a doctorate degree in order to be licensed.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else?
Well, I would say, I think a lot of our students are told that they're great listeners.
Mm-hmm.
They give good advice. They're good friends. So these are all, you know...
good characteristics
that tell you that you care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you like doing this because you have sort of a narcissistic tendency, which we talked about in our episode 10,
yes,
then I would kind of think a little bit before you enter into the field. But I think this shows that you care enough about other people and want to hear their stories mm-hmm. that you might be a pretty good match.
Right.
The one thing I would say, what I say to all of my students, is be careful of advice, because advice is what we do. Advice is what we give to each other when we're not in therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's what friends say, it's what parents, what family, what peers say, what coworkers say.
You should break up with him, or you should divorce him, or you know, leave him. Who's you know? That's advice giving.
Yeah. And that's based off of our own experiences, right. And that's why we give advice. So what you would learn in a mental health counseling program is how to take that piece, not silence it, because it still informs you in a way,
mm-hmm.
but you know, put it in a box in the side while you're with your client and say, this is one route. Let me hear what that client's saying to see if this is the route.
Yeah, you're facilitating clients' self-exploration into their own strengths and their own resources that are mm-hmm. available to them, and then helping the client lay it all out on the table, all the different options, and then going into exploring each one and how it would affect them and whether it would work for them and so forth. So, you know, that's a really good point, because that was something that stood out to me too from the listeners, that saying that he gives good advice. And I wonder how much he knows about what it's like to be a therapist. So that's one thing that I would recommend, is to do a little mm-hmm. bit more research on what it's like and to actually talk to other therapists about their experience.
Yeah, go mm-hmm. talk to a program too. Go talk to the professors in the program. All professors are counselors or psychologists, so they're great at listening and they're great at talking and sharing, and they're happy to talk with you. At least I'm speaking for our program.
Yes.
We're all very happy to do that for you, Christopher
Crossroads.
And I would say do some research, and since you don't have the psychology background, do a little research and sort of that too, though you'll kind of learn the important aspects of that when you enter into a master's in counseling program.
And do talk to a variety of people.
Oh,
don't
totally.
Just talk to one person and get their experience, because you'll see that it varies.
And not just one field. You know, I would talk to a counselor, a social worker, a psychologist, and get
see
a sense
exactly
of
what they do.
Yeah,
exactly.
We all want to help people, but we do it in different ways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very good. So that's where I would start off in. Okay. Very good. Okay. So that's good. We just gave good advice, didn't we?
Damn it.
We just gave good advice for Christopher Crossroads. So,
yes.
Anyways, we both wish you luck in your endeavors, and hopefully you do find your place career-wise, your journey.
Christopher, we're rooting for you, and our fingers are crossed.
All right, so Derek, what's your takeaway from today?
My takeaway is to watch as many soap operas as you can to become empathetic. And no, really, my takeaway is empathy takes courage. I mean, if you have, if you're trying to feel it for someone you have no connection to, like the example you gave about the children refugees coming across the border, and if you haven't done that, you don't know what it feels like. So it takes risk and courage to be able to jump into other people's shoes to try to sort of feel what they're feeling. So I just encourage you to do that.
Yeah. And my takeaway is see the benefits of empathy and how it can really help you flourish as a human being and enhance your life overall and relationships.
Right.
Yeah.
So this was episode 11.
Yes.
On empathy.
Wow.
How are you feeling?
I feel really good.
I feel good too.
Yeah. And in fact, I don't know if I want to argue with you now on
15.
Episode 15. Yeah.
Well, why don't we... I can't answer that question.
Oh.
The music came on.
Okay.
So thank you for listening to Freudian Quips on WPRK 91.5 FM, Rollins College Radio. Again, check us out on Facebook and Twitter where you can interact with the show and be a part of the Doctor's Notes section, just like Christopher Crossroads. And we'll be happy to sort of be there with you. Until next time, I'm Dr. Palladino.
And I'm Dr. Sanabria.
Be mentally healthy and word to your edible complex.
Listening to
WPRK
91.5 FM.
The best.
The best.
The best in basement radio.
WPRK.
WPRK.
Yes, it's